Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite team, The Fan, on the Odyssey, iHeart, and TuneIn apps.
Call his wife in 403. McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. 4 o'clock. One more hour of our 5 hour midnight ride as we take it till 5 a.m. and the warm up show. Got Fleegs on the other side, 888-808-1019. That's the number to call. We open up with the Knicks off of their loss last night to the Milwaukee Bucks as I spilled coffee all over myself. Fleegs, can you run in here and get the paper towel so I don't have to like get off the mic? Second time, I spilled water on myself. I spilled coffee all over myself. Brand new shirt. I was just bragging about it. All captain on video. I'm sure they're going to get it. I mean, spilled it right on myself. All right. Good start to the 4 o'clock hour. All right, where was I? The Knicks losing to Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks, as obviously this team that is now 2-2 after four, after winning the first two games at home and then now losing to Miami and Milwaukee in back-to-back losses on the road. What we saw last night was an incredible first half where, you know, this team right now is playing this game where they're putting up a bunch of threes, right? Brown was just talking about it. You heard the coach in the update there talking about spacing, talking about getting their shot. He wants to put up 40 threes a game. They've put up 40 threes in every single game they've played this year, at least. And when it goes well, like it did in the second quarter, where they put up 45 points in the second quarter, they're an explosive team. And that's what they were at times in this game. That's what they've been in times in the two home wins against Cleveland and Boston. But at the same time, we're still seeing a lot of the issues. Now, it's four games in. And I don't want to overreact, and it's certainly not a time to stand up on the table and scream they should have never fired Tibbs. What is this? Blah, blah, blah. And I know many will do it. I heard people calling into Keith as I was driving in, listening to that. And nor was it time to brag about how much better they are under Mike Brown after two games. It is not the time to dismiss everything they're trying to do right now. But you look at this, and some of the issues that were supposed to be fixed, some of the issues that he was brought here designed specifically to fix, are still there. It's four games in, plenty of time to fix it, but they're still there. And yeah, they're dealing with injuries, no doubt. They're dealing with Mitch Robinson, who still hasn't been yet able to play despite playing in the preseason. So still not sure exactly what's going on with that injury. I know it's his ankle. He's retweaked it or whatever, but we're still yet to see him play. You got the back spasms from Hart that cost him the first game of the year. You've got Deuce McBride out for, you know, personal reasons. And the most important one as of this moment right now is Carl Anthony Towns and his quad, because he was awful last night. He's played every game, but he was awful last night. And that's part of the issue, too. And I spent most of the open talking about Carl Anthony Towns, who is supposed to be this secondary star. We've had this conversation his entire time here over the last year in his tenure with the New York Knicks. He was the guy who they finally, like, they got, I shouldn't say lucky, but Brunson became better than anyone could have expected. He emerged as the superstar of this team. And we've been playing this game with the Knicks for forever, whether it's going back to Donnie Walsh and LeBron James and that miserable meeting that they had with their, where, you know, the video didn't work, whatever else. Like, they've been waiting to pounce and get that right superstar who wanted to come here and change this franchise. And it kind of happened, you know, sort of unexpectedly with Brunson, and you're looking for that secondary star. And it's ironic they lost to Giannis last night because of all the rumors about Giannis in the offseason and, you know, a report that he kind of shot down in the post game last night, but a report of him being willing to move on if anywhere and be, if he was willing to accept a trade out of Milwaukee and go anywhere, it would have been the New York Knicks. And so they're looking for this superstar, and the two of them are the superstars. It is Brunson, it is Karl Anthony Towns. And right now, a lot of the reason that Brown was brought in, yeah, he's brought in to, you know, play the bench a little bit, sure. He's brought in because a lot of the players had an issue with Tibbs, the former coach, whether it was the amount of minutes they were playing, the offense they were running, the adjustments they were making, whatever the case may be. We know that Mikal Bridges was openly critical about the minutes earlier in the season last year, and we know how the exit meetings went, and that's why he's not here. But for the mandates for this coach were play the bench more, and they obviously made the bench better and went out and signed some guys, you know, Clarkson notably, to go make this bench better. But he's rolling out some of the same guys, Kolick. He's rolling out 11 deep, and it's been to the benefit of the first two games. And I'm not sure, certainly in Miami, where the bench was just got awful in that game, I don't know how much it actually helped the team in that game, rolling out as many players and playing them as many minutes. But that was part of it, and he's clearly doing that. But to me, the other part of it was they needed to get Karl Anthony Towns going. And whether it was Tibbs and his relationship with him in Minnesota, which didn't go all that well, or whether it was last year and the idea that by the end of the season, just complete lack of cohesion between him and Jalen Brunson, and that they were clearly better apart. By the end of the year, especially into the postseason, Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns just didn't jive. They didn't fit. You got your best ball when they were separate. Certainly Karl Anthony Towns played his best basketball when Jalen Brunson wasn't on the floor. And so part of it was to get him more involved. Part of it was supposed to be to fix that relationship. And watching the game four games in, and you look at Karl Anthony Towns last night, he was just god-awful. He scores 8 points. He was 2 for 12 from the floor. 0 for 3 from behind the arc. He got half of his points from the foul line. And he's just looked bad to start the year. And I know a lot of that could be based on the injury. And we know he's playing through something. And while that's admirable and I appreciate it, and I think a lot of it has to do with no Mitchell Robinson, so they feel they have to play him. When he's out there, sorry, if you're healthy enough to play, you're healthy enough to be judged by that play. And it has been bad. And it's been going back to the preseason when the coach openly talked about Karl Anthony Towns is going to have a lot to do to change. Like, he's got the most of all the players here. Karl Anthony Towns has the most adapting to do to get into the offense. Karl Anthony Towns has talked about not knowing his role inside the offense. And that was specifically part of the reason Mike Brown was brought here. So it's on the coach to figure out, and Mike Brown talked in the postgame, well, once things get settled, once we get the spacing on the floor correct, once we start figuring things out and start start jiving together, Karl Anthony Towns will be more than happy. Karl Anthony Towns will know what he wants, and Karl Anthony Towns will start playing better. And maybe that's true, and again, it is four games in, but there's no way to like what you've seen so far. And as I fully admit, it's on the coach to figure that out in many aspects. The other frustrating thing about Karl Anthony Towns is it doesn't take Jalen Brunson much to figure out the role of his offense. Like, Jalen Brunson last night got buckets when he needed. He got 36 points. He's aggressive. Karl Anthony Towns is one of the, what people will tell you, is one of the tougher guards in the NBA. Like, it's tough to stop him. He can shoot. He's one of the better shooting big men in the sport. Last year, for the first three quarters of the season, he was the Knicks' most efficient three-point shooter. So he's got that element to his game, which he hasn't found yet this season, but he's got that element to his game, plus his size, plus his strength, or what should be his strength. And you know what? I don't care Like, yeah, it's on Mike Brown to figure out the role inside this offense for him. It's also on him to not care about roles. And when it's time for him to get his, go get it. And if you watched the game last night, like, he's just not aggressive. And they were able to throw Kuzma at him. They were able to throw, obviously, Giannis at him, Miles Turner at him. And 2 for 12 from the floor. And foul trouble again. And some of the same things we're seeing at the worst of his play last year have started this year. And if the Knicks want to be who we all think they can be, if the Knicks want to go chase a championship this year, if the Knicks want to go be a one seed or a two seed and play Eastern Conference final games at Madison Square Garden, you know, play the first game, the last game at Madison Square Garden, they're going to have to be better than this. And now 2-2 doesn't stop them from that. There's still 78 games to be played. But he's going to have to figure something out quick. And I don't know if he's injured. If he's too injured to play, don't play him. It's the beginning part of the season. And we also saw Brunson last night kind of tweak a knee or have some sort of issue where it looked like he fell down in a heap for a second, got back up, came right back into the game. But I don't know if now he's going to be dealing with something. So you've got Karl-Anthony Towns dealing with a quad. You got now Jalen Brunson dealing with a knee. You've got Mitchell Robinson dealing with a foot that's kept him out so far, still hasn't played yet. You've got something going on with Deuce and his personal, you know, personal reasons why he's not with the team. You got Josh Hart and his back issues. Like, this team is kind of banged up. This team is still finding itself with the new coach. And a lot of the issues that were the emphasis of changing at the end of last year have already reared their ugly head. And they've lost, you know, now back-to-back games against Miami and Milwaukee, and they'll look to take on Friday night with a couple of days off in between. Friday night on the road against Chicago in a game that they need to go win. They got a home-and-home over the next couple of days with Chicago. Go win both of those games. Because this is supposed to be not just a team that makes it to the NBA Finals. It's supposed to be a team that's going to be a dominant regular season team inside a compromised Eastern Conference. And while they beat the two teams they couldn't beat last year, in the regular season at least, in the Celtics and Cleveland, they just lost to a team that they handled all of last year in Milwaukee. And they allowed Giannis to take over in the second half, and they scored five more points in the second quarter than they did in the entire second half. And they have become, you know, Brown wants to run this offense, run it fast. A lot of fast break opportunities, a lot of three-pointers. He wants 43-pointers. You chuck up 43-pointers, 45-3-pointers, 46-3-pointers, you better hit them. And you better be a great rebounding team and an offensive rebounding team. And that's really what the difference was in the first two games of the year, because they haven't shot the ball well yet. The difference was against Boston and Cleveland, they got a ton of offensive rebounds and had a ton of second-chance points. So you better either make them or be one hell of an offensive rebounding team. And right now, with a compromised cat and still no Mitchell Robinson, and who knows how often they're going to have to spell Josh Hart, where are the rebounds coming from? So you better be able to shoot it. And so far, not so good. They shot 32% last night. And in the Miami game, the bench was 1 for 18 shooting threes. 1 for 18. Last night, Shamet was 4 for 9 and Bridges was 3 for 7. Besides that, OG Anunoby, one of six, and scored 9 points in this game. 3 for 11 from the floor. Karl-Anthony Towns, 2 of 12 from the floor. It's early. I'm not panicking. No one should. But there were issues that are supposed to be fixed, and we're realizing that those issues still exist today as of right now. And Karl-Anthony Towns needs to be, if he is not what we hoped, if he's not going to be a superstar, if he's not going to be your second best player, if he's not going to be somebody you can go to count on to go get baskets whenever they need him, because that's what happened in this game, let's be honest. The reason they lost this game is the second quarter, everything worked. Shamet was hitting threes, Bridges was hitting threes, Brunson was scoring at will. They scored 45 points in that quarter. The offense, the ball was moving. Everything was great. And then in the second half, the shots stopped falling. Brunson ran out of gas a little bit. Shamet started missing threes, and there was nowhere to go. And it was a lot of what we saw last year, just everyone standing around waiting for the captain to go make a move and for him to figure out how to make a basket. Because honestly, besides Brunson, the one thing about this offense, it can be dynamic. They can make shots. They can be physical. They can get rebounds. They do have guys who can score a little bit. And they do have what should be superstars in this game and all-stars throughout the lineup here. They don't have a lot of guys who can create their own shot. Like, OG Anunoby's not that guy. He's proven to be a better offensive player than we thought as a, you know, kind of a defensive guy coming over in the trade from Toronto. He's been better at shooting. He's been better at hitting threes. He's been better at getting to the basket, but give him the ball and say, create a shot, not his game. Karl Anthony Towns needs to be that, not so far this year. Mikal Bridges, I think his short game is good enough to become that player and should be that player, but I mean, from time to time, you could see him drive to the basket and fade back. The best thing about him so far is he's getting to the foul line on a regular basis. I think Reggie even said it during the broadcast that this is about as aggressive as going to the basket as we've seen from Mikal Bridges. So that's one thing that I would have liked to have seen improve this year, and we have seen that. He takes five foul shots last night. I can remember stretches of four or five games without five foul shots from Mikal Bridges. And he was 50% from the floor last night, so he played fairly well. But, I mean, they don't have a lot of guys who create their own shot. And right now, that second guy off the bench, too, that, I mean, we can roll out 11 all we want. Who's that instant offense guy? You know, Clarkson should be, and last night was when he first came in, but he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn against Miami. Like, who's that guy who's going to come in and give them that instant offense? I mean, Deuce McBride when he's not in the starting lineup, but he's not in the lineup right now with personal reasons. So they've got a lot of things to answer still. They've got a lot of moving parts that need to be figured out still. Karl Anthony Towns not playing overly well, dealing with an injury. How significant, we don't know, but if it's hampering him to this point where he's going to score 8 points, might as well sit him and get him healthy. But questions still to answer, even at 2-2, even at only 4 games in, we're just seeing some things that could use some attention here from Mike Brown and this New York Knicks team.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Have something to say? Dial us 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Count on Sundays all season long with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
All right, 425, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Yeah, I saw the Jaylen Brown story. I didn't mention it when they played, but it was clear as day. When Jaylen Brown trying to go to the basket against OG Anunoby, and he puts his head kind of he puts his shoulder down and his head hits him like in the stomach as he's trying to drive to the basket. And then he backs away, and you can see there's like a stain on OG Anunoby's shirt. And, you know, I guess the hair paint off of, you know, his head that he's trying to cover up the receding hairline or whatever was all over OG Anunoby. Oh, my goodness. You think that's embarrassing? I got you. You know. You're an NBA player. You'll be all right. Try taking videos right in front of your face with a round face. Having everybody post it everywhere. Got more mentions of Ozempic than anybody else in the history of mankind. 888-808-1019. All right. You know, as we're going to turn now, as today is hump day, as they like to call it, we are moving closer to the week. We've spent a lot of time yelling about Brian Daboll. We've spent a lot of time talking about Jackson Dart. Obviously, the injury to Cam Scadaboo, who had surgery right away. We also found out that Malik Nabers had surgery in Los Angeles, I believe, with the Dallas Cowboy team doctor performing the ACL repair, which I don't know why. I mean, team doctors are just there as, like, if the team wants to work through him. Now, I guess not the Giant team doctor. That's more of the issue, I guess. But I guess people were kind of taken aback that the Dallas Cowboy team doctor, like, that doctor is going to somehow sabotage the injury because he's a Cowboy fan or something. But that was a little bit odd. But you've lost, you know, Nabers, obviously. You've lost Cam Scadaboo. You really don't have a wide receiving core at all. I think Tracy is obviously, I mean, he was viewed as the starting running back entering the year, had a great rookie season. I don't think they're going to miss the actual production on the field all that much. Cam was great, don't get me wrong, and the relationship between him and Jackson Dart, like, that's what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the relationship between him and Jackson Dart, his just vibe and everything that he came with. And being so willing to talk about changing the organization and how much those two young kids were uplifting this team, I'm more concerned about the vibe around the building and with this team, with the loss of Cam, with the loss of Scadaboo, more than I am actually the production. Although that's a concern too, but you look at this team right now, right? They're going into this game 2-6. I mean, if they're going to make the playoffs, clearly they need to win this game as well as, you know, the next whole bunch. But I don't even view it that way. I'm not overly concerned about the playoffs necessarily, because at 2-6, the likelihood of them making the playoffs is very impractical. But they're welcoming in a 49ers team that hasn't been all that great offensively. They've been missing their starting quarterback, obviously, for a while. They're coming off a loss to the Texans. But we all know they have the ability to run the football. And that has been the main problem. So you go into it, and we can talk all we want about Brian Daboll. Like, this is the situation Brian Daboll finds himself in. Like, we talk, like, it, that, this is part of the reason why I'm so kind of taken aback with the anger and vitriol and hatred that he's getting. Like, it's not just like I'm disappointed in him. It's like, get him the hell out of our organization as fast as humanly possible. Otherwise, we're all doomed and screwed. Like, think of the situation the Giants are going to head into this game against the 49ers, right? They've lost Cam now. They've lost their best running back weapon. They lost their best wide receiver weapon. They really don't have much talent at the wide receiver position. Their tight ends can be productive, but their hands have not been great this year. They've made some plays to the tight end after years of felt like never making plays to the tight end, but their hands aren't all that great. I wouldn't call them explosive players. They're serviceable tight ends. You've got a defense that has Dexter Lawrence playing the worst football of his career and being called out. We talked about this yesterday, being called out by Carl Banks. You know, questioning whether or not he's injured still. Questioning, you know, talking about how teams don't respect him. Talking about how now it's time for him to stand up and you know, knock in his game. Is you've seen the rankings on you know, Pro Football Focus. He's grading out as bad as almost anyone on the defense. You've got still issues with the defensive backfield. Like, and you're welcoming in a 49ers team that still managed to win some games, whose defense with Robert Saleh has lost key pieces, Bosa, Fred Warner, and still have played relatively well. We know they can run the football. This is a tough game, but having said that, like, I expect the offense to perform. I expect this quarterback to perform. That's what it's about for me. We're going to find out whether or not the defense that should feel disrespected, that should be pissed off, that should be embarrassed off of that performance in Philadelphia and the way they were able to run the football down their throat. All the talk all week. If they have any respect for this coordinator at all, they understand that his job is being, you know, questioned isn't even the answer. Like, the entire fan base thinks he needs to be gone tomorrow. The rest of the media doesn't think he's doing a very good job either. Like, if they have any respect for their coach, if they have any respect for themselves, that defense has got to do a hell of a better job of stopping the run. They have to scheme to stop the run. We'll see who the quarterback is and what the threat is offensively. But, I mean, you go up against the 49ers right now with possibly Mac Jones at quarterback, you're stopping the run. That's first and foremost what you have to do. So if they could stop the run, you are going up against a banged-up 49ers defense that's coached very well but is banged up. And you should have Jackson Dart ready to go play football. He made some comments, too, after the game last week, talking about needs to improve the whole organization. It needs to be about winning. We need to have higher standards, all this stuff. Okay, let's go out there and do it. Same thing, this coach, extremely under fire right now. Can't even say his name without people just popping their head out going, he sucks. This is going to be an interesting game. And to me, at 2-6, breaking in a rookie quarterback, like, I want to see them win the game, obviously. But I need, again, every week I'm going to keep saying this. I need to see the progression of Jackson Dart. I need to see him still continue to play well. Need to minimize the mistakes. Need to go out there and make plays with what limited weapons he has. And I've talked about that too, obviously. Trade deadline a week away. They need to go find him someone to go throw the ball to. Like, absolutely, without question. Like, it's not just about draft picks. You know how I feel. I'm a tanker, right? I want to tank not only for the first round pick, but for every pick after that. Once the season's dead, you're typically better off losing these games. You want the better picks. It's how I believe. It's what I think. Change the rules, and then I'll change my mind. But not when you have the quarterback. Not when you are breaking in a rookie quarterback. This is about getting him going inside the NFL, getting his career started, building the confidence, which I don't think he's lacking of, but building a relationship with him and his coach, building an offense, building a rapport, and building a rapport with his playmakers. And right now, his best playmakers of next year aren't on the team. And they're going to need another wide receiver next year anyway. If there is any way, I know they really like Waddle. I don't know how Miami feels after they just beat up on Atlanta. I don't know how they feel about it. It is a team-friendly contract with Waddle. But they need to bring in someone. And preferably someone who's going to be here next year too. Someone who's talented, who's better than what they have right now, and someone he can build a rapport with and lean on. Because this is all about him. It's all about him. It really is. We're at that point at 2-6. It's the winning of the game would be nice. And I expect them to win some games. I'll be honest with you. I still expect them to win games if the quarterback plays well. Right, I think they're capable of beating the 49ers. I think they're more than capable of going on the road and beating the Bears. I think they at home against the Packers. That's a tough game to win, but they can. Lions on the road is tough. The Patriots, which once was deemed a possible victory, right now with the way they're playing seems tough. Commanders at home return the favor of opening week. I don't think the Vikings are any good right now. Even if J.J. McCarthy comes back, I know Carson Wentz is gone. The Raiders have been terrible, and the Cowboys' defense is terrible. Like, down the stretch of the season, if he continues to play well, you're looking at Washington at home, Minnesota at home, Raiders on the road, Cowboys at home. I mean, you got to get three of those four games. And they absolutely can. It's all about the quarterback right now. Continue to work with the quarterback. Firing Dable right now is absolutely off the table. Next year, we'll see, depending on how the rest of the season goes. But you know me, I'm of the mindset where as long as this quarterback's playing well, I'm not changing streams on him. That's just how I feel about it. 888-808-1019. Brett in Long Island. What's up, Brett?
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I want to finish the conversation from yesterday, but I do want to say your tanking logic doesn't make sense because you would want to get the best pick, whether it be a left tackle, whether you've seen all different types of positions, a defensive lineman. So that doesn't even make sense. Just tank for a quarterback.
They're not tanking for the quarterback.
No, you always say, yes. I want to tank for a quarter. I'm not talking about this situation. You say, I'm generalizing, Correct. You feel like you have to tank.
That's the most obvious tank situation when you're in need of a quarterback, yes.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying, but a left tackle, other position, you don't just tank for that. If you're out, if you feel like you're not going to make the playoffs and you want to tank, you tank for any position.
I don't disagree with that, but my point is they have the quarterback, and I can justify trying to win with Jackson Dart is more important than the tank.
I understand that. All right. So, and then the next thing about yesterday's conversation where I felt like you rudely hung up on me, I really wanted to finish some very valuable points. I feel like you're deflecting all of the blame away from this head coach. I've been giving it a lot of thought. You said something about, yes, we can move on from the defensive coordinator, right?
Yep.
We blamed Daniel Jones for a long time. Mm-hmm. You said yesterday, I put a lot of blame on the general manager, so I'm listening.
Yeah.
And then I'm finding that you're making, like, excuses for him. I'm just curious.
I'm not making excuses. He gets blame.
Don't head coaches, though. No, yeah. But we're talking about keeping him, right?
Yes.
Like you keep it. So don't head coaches, Mike Tomlin and these other guys, don't they not make excuses like, oh, we have Mason Rudolph and Pickett. Maybe we don't have a good quarterback. But you know what? I'll do better on defense and special teams, and I'll find ways to win.
Yep.
I don't feel like we're finding excuses for the last 5 years.
Well, it's not five years.
Well, yeah, whatever it is. Like you, and I never heard such a thing. Let's keep the coach because he wanted a player?
Like, yeah, because he drafted the player and it's working with the player.
And he doesn't play anymore.
What did the owner say about your boy Daniel Jones when he hired these two? What did he say?
I don't know. What did he say?
He said he ruined Daniel Jones by changing coaches on him. That's what he said. He gave him Joe Judge. Right now, the most important and difficult question to answer in the NFL is who is your starting quarterback, and if you don't have one, where are you getting one? The New York Jets organization hasn't answered that question since the early 70s. The Cleveland Browns haven't answered that question in practically their entire history. And yet, here we are 5 weeks into this quarterback's tenure, and we feel like we've answered the question. And he was the one who wanted him drafted. He's the one who's working with him. He's the one who's got him to this point where their relationship is working to such a level that when you start a rebuild, and I view this, and that's maybe where I differ from you and many other fans, I view this as year one of another rebuild. And year one, when you draft a quarterback, is about developing that quarterback. And that part of this is going so exceedingly well that I don't want to mess with it.
You know what I find ironic, though?
What's that?
Like, you can turn it on and off, but they did extend Daniel Jones. And you're going to say, what, he had no part of that?
No, he had a part of that. They felt they had no choice. The success made them feel like they couldn't tell the fan base, we're not bringing back the young quarterback.
When is the coach, like, responsible for picking a quarterback? I thought the general manager was the guy.
General manager gets credit for it too, 100%. General manager gets credit for it too.
Wait, but you're just saying table.
Because I watched a video. I watched a video. Like, not just, like, speculation.
Table should be a GM, then, if that's the way you're lying. I'm just
saying. No, he's a quarterback. He's good at evaluating the quarterback position.
Don't say it.
He's good at evaluating the quarterback position. Oh, stop. No, he wasn't.
Tommy DeVito is not, nobody knows about him anymore. That was the guy, oh, look what he did with him.
Yeah.
But now you quietly don't talk about that anymore. They didn't know anything about the guy. And then
Tommy DeVito won a game against Daniel Jones.
Yeah. Was so bad that he should have turned him around, Chris, because the Colts figured something
out. He needed to get out. They figured something out. He's playing very good. You know what they figured out? Have a good team that runs the football. That's what they figured out. Have the best running back situation in the NFL. Have the best run game in the NFL. And play the easiest schedule in the NFL. That's what they figured out with Daniel Jones. And he's playing very well. And part of it was he just needed to get the hell out of here. Like, sometimes a change of scenery just does it. Now, again, Brian Daboll did coach him up. I don't understand it. Year one with Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones sucked for 2 years. 2 years under Joe Judge was awful. He was a turnover machine. He led the NFL in turnovers. The first year here with this coach, he threw a bad interception week one in the red zone. The coach got in his face, and he became, from that moment on, the least turned over quarterback in the NFL. They won 9 games with him, and then they won a road playoff game. He helped Daniel Jones turn from a turnover machine who was a disaster under Joe Judge to the least turned over quarterback in the NFL and a playoff winner and a road playoff game winner. From that point on, yeah, for many reasons, it failed. A lot of it to do with the coach, a lot of it to do with Daniel Jones. He also was injured for a lot of that time. He blew out a knee. He had the second neck injury. He wasn't on the field all the time. Brian Daboll was coaching a lot of other quarterbacks. And as far as Josh Allen, no other subject about Brian Daboll pisses me off more than this. It's absolute nonsense. And the only reason I keep bringing it up, I'm not trying to continually give you the Josh Allen argument, but people continually try and tell me that he had no impact on Josh Allen's career. It's absolutely asinine. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So great players, no coach ever impacts them. They're just going to be great, and it doesn't matter. His father, his high school coach, his college coach, and none of the NFL coaches, it doesn't matter. Nothing along the way helped. Josh Allen's just great. Do you remember Josh Allen's rookie season? Do you remember the talk of Josh Allen in the draft? Josh Allen was the biggest project quarterback in that draft. Lamar Jackson was thought maybe would have to change positions. You could argue, but he played at Louisville. Like, we saw him play. Yeah, he was a running quarterback who they thought might have to change positions, but nobody knew anything other than he could throw the ball a mile. That was Josh Allen. They drafted him. His rookie season, he was a mess. He was awful. He wasn't Jackson Dart. He wasn't Jaden Daniels. He wasn't Stroud. He didn't come in and have immediate success. He was awful year one. Awful. All he did was run and turn the ball over. That's it. By year three, he was a budding superstar. By year three, the transition was made from awful rookie to budding superstar. Yes, that progression continued to happen after Daboll left. And he's hit higher heights since Daboll has left. That doesn't change the fact that he was instrumental in the part of the transition from lousy, inexperienced rookie to NFL superstar. Ask Josh Allen if Brian Daboll played a role. Forget me, forget you. Go ask Josh Allen how he feels about Brian Daboll and his role in helping him become the player he is today. I'm not saying it makes him the greatest quarterback coach of all time. I'm not saying it means he can't be fired. I'm not saying it means he's going to turn Jackson Dart into Josh Allen. But that's why he was hired. And don't dismiss it because Josh Allen's a great talent. He was instrumental in that happening. Like, I don't understand why people have a problem with this. I don't understand why people seem to think that doesn't matter. Of course it matters. Of course it matters. He was brought here because of the work he did with Josh Allen. That's what made him a viable candidate for not only the Giants head coaching job, but any head coaching job. How he turned around that Buffalo offense with Josh Allen. And Joe Shane is here because he was part of the group. that drafted Josh Allen and changed the Buffalo Bills from perennial loser to division-winning team year in and year out. They were there for that. That's why they got hired. So all I've ever said was, it seems silly to hire a coach because of his relationship and his work with a young quarterback and never give him one. That's all I've ever said. And that's why I wanted to keep him last year. And here's my other, and here's my main point about Brian Daboll. He had two losing seasons. They were ugly. They were miserable. John Mara had every right to fire him right then and there. He didn't. He kept him around. And for me, it's not just a, hey, give me another chance to have a winning season. They kept him around knowing that they were going to draft a quarterback. Why would you keep a coach around who you hired? Why would you keep a regime around that you hired specifically because of their ability to draft and develop a quarterback in Buffalo? Why would you hire that tandem, bring them here, never give them that opportunity until year four, keep them despite the losing, despite the airplanes flying over the building? You keep them. You allow them to make the same decision they made in Buffalo. You allow them to make it here. You keep them off the losing. You let them draft the quarterback. You let him develop the young quarterback. It's going exceedingly well, but he needs to be fired. They're doing exactly what they were kept to do. And with Dart, they're 2-3. They've played five games. They've won two. They've lost three. And those two wins were against playoff teams. Those two wins are against Jim Harbaugh and the 3-0 Chargers, who everybody thought was going to come into MetLife and steamroll the Giants in Jackson Dart's first ever career start. And then they beat the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles, who have owned the New York Giants for two decades, and did it by doubling them up 34-17. Like, yeah, five turnovers led to an ugly loss in New Orleans. Yeah, they blew a 19-point lead against the Denver Broncos. And yes, they went into Philadelphia and lost to the defending Super Bowl champs. Defense was ugly. Blowing the game in Denver was ugly, and that's on the coach too. But the quarterback's playing great, and they're no pushover, and they are in these games. Why would you not want to continue that? Now, let's see. He's got 10 more games. If those 10 games are ugly and Jackson Dart doesn't play well, we have a different conversation. But if Jackson Dart continues to play well, and they win a handful of these games, even if the final record is not what we would hope for, how are you making a decision to move on from that coach who you kept to do just this, and he's succeeding at it? Doesn't make any sense to me.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
your friends pretend they know sports. WFAN actually does. Get smarter, louder, and way more annoying at watch parties. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
Before we get to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show, let's try and get to as many calls as we can. Let's go to Jim in Waterford. What's up, Jim?
Good morning, Chris. You know, good morning. you gave your own reason why Dable should not be brought back. Someone brought up that he did a good job with Daniel Jones in year one, and then, to use your own words, the wheels fell off. And part of the reason why the wheels fell off with Daniel Jones was because of Dable. And
why?
Dable, to me, is an inferior coach. He's not a good game manager, and he doesn't have the temperament. So you don't bring back Dable because of one man, Jackson Dart. You've got the rest of the team that he's responsible for.
I understand that. They're 2-3, and they beat the Chargers and the Eagles. Like, once they went to Jackson Dart, the whole thing has changed. Have they been that bad in these 5 weeks that the coach can't come back?
Previous history says no, he doesn't come back because of what happened.
I don't care about previous history.
What happened with Daniel Jones?
Daniel Jones wasn't his guy. Daniel Jones was in year three of his career before he ever saw Brian Dable. This is not the same thing.
He did a good job with him in year one.
He told him to stop looking for a second progression, look for one read, and then tuck it and run, and stop turning the ball over, and hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley. And then Daniel Jones got hurt almost immediately in year number two. And the offensive line got blown up for the 40-0 game against Dallas. Jones eventually gets hurt. And then it just never worked for him. And maybe he's healthier now than he's ever been. He's the second year removed from the ACL surgery. I don't know. And he probably just needed a change of scenery. And I'm not saying the failing of Daniel Jones isn't on him, but I don't think you could look at it and say, oh, great year one, destined for lousiness because that's what happened with Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones wasn't his guy. Daniel Jones was in year three of his career when Dable showed up. He had already had two different head coaches and three different offenses by the time Dable got a chance to work with him. It's not the same thing. Richard in Manhattan. What's up, Richard?
Toronto. I've never seen a resilient team like them.
Yeah, they're pretty resilient. I give it to them.
A couple of weeks ago, that 15-inning game against Seattle, that Seattle game five, they went down 3-2, 15-inning game. They lost, great game. Could have crushed them. They came back and won two. The other night, they lose 18 to the Dodgers. Same day, they come back and beat the Dodgers. So it's pretty impressive.
No doubt.
Chris,
very impressive. Yep.
We're going to learn two things we've been hearing on your station, the other station, for the last 3-4 years. They're both going to be untrue at the end of the year. Gettleman was a terrible general manager. He may have drafted two MVPs in a row, Saquon and Daniel. If Daniel is not the MVP, the other thing we heard on the boat, the MVP will be Jonathan Taylor. The other thing we've heard on both stations for the last 3-4 years, the running back is being devalued. Well, I looked last week, Cook, Reese Hall, Saquon, Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry, Christian McCaffrey, these guys are winning games. You're going to tell me a running back is devalued in the NFL? Now. The running back is coming back, and it's just as valuable as it's always been.
Yeah, I mean, not that the running back position. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but let me ask you a question.
No, I'm talking specifically if those guys were available with the number one pick in April's.
No, absolutely
I'd
not.
Still
I wouldn't
take any
that.
Of them guys.
No, I think you're crazy.
I disagree.
Really?
I'd take Breece Hall, number one. I'd take Jonathan Taylor, number one.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I think that's crazy.
Okay, we disagree.
We disagree, because let me ask you a question. Like, we just talked about the Giants. What did Cam Scatterby do for this team, and how productive was he, and where'd they get him?
Well, you know,
They got him in the fourth round. That's my point. It's not that the running back position necessarily is that there's a lot of guys who can give you all you need at the running back position. I'd rather draft one like Cam Scatterby in the fourth round than take the first overall pick with Jonathan Taylor, as great as he is. But I'll give you the Gettleman stuff. He did draft a lot of good players. He did make some great plays. Did have some great picks. Lawrence, hopefully, is going to come back. But Lawrence was a great pick. Andrew Thomas was a great pick. Daniel Jones has an opportunity, but we'll see. All right, thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. Thanks for watching on YouTube. Thanks to Fleegs. We'll catch you tomorrow, 2 a.m. I'm out of here. Warm-up show's next. Bye-bye. Sports Radio 101.9 FM.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.